who's heard of Monsanto? Who hates Monsanto? Okay, good. There's only one. One out of 50 is all right. So, there's been a lot of questions earlier about team structure and things, so I'm going to get that right off the bat. So I lead a team of four folks on the social media team. We're part of a larger digital group, what we call Digital Monsanto. So that includes content team, which has three folks on it with a video producer, and then web. So running Monsanto.com, Discover, corporate websites, all that fun stuff. So total there's like 10 of us that are in digital, and we were in a larger global communications group. So just to set the bases there. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how this semi-intentional, but not really intentional, it's going to sound like it at the end probably, and my bosses, I'll probably say it was intentional the whole time, but this journey we've taken over the last 8+ years at Monsanto of empowering our customers to speak on our behalf, and then to kind of doing that for our employees too. So if you think back about 8 years ago, Monsanto sort of was stuck in, as many large companies probably still are today sometimes, very much PR driven. Let's get media placements, let's do this, they didn't advertise. We're business to business, farmers are businessmen, whether we want to think they just grow food for us. We all partake in agriculture because we're eating and drinking every single day, three times hopefully. But at that time, farmers just had it kind of nice. They were growing our crops and we were buying it and everything was great in their minds and people left them alone more or less until a farm bill came up in Congress and then they'd go back to producing food for us and we have nice abundant food here in the United States. But then 2008 came around, it's kind of a flashpoint for us. Harvest of Fear was an article in Vanity Fair. You can look it up if you just search Monsanto. It's probably gonna be the first article that pops up and it's 8 years old. It details some of our business practices, mainly around how we occasionally have sued our farmer customers for patent infringements. There's a whole story there. Be happy to talk about it after the session if you want. But that was a big thing. Food Inc., if you've seen that movie, it's really interesting look. I highly recommend you see it. It talks about the whole food system in their view of what, big ag, if you will, or big industry in ag. It's sort of a peek behind the curtain. That featured Monsanto in that as well. We declined the comment at that time. Again, as I said, we were kind of entrenched in that whole media. People are doing documentaries. You kind of don't do that as a brand at that time. If you think back to what that was, nowadays we're open to those conversations, and we can talk about that in a little bit. In defense of food, Michael Pollan, if you've heard of him, very influential person in the food and ag space. He does a lot of documentaries, a lot of books out there. Wrote this thing, sort of organic and local, and all these things are great. And then social media, I think that's something we sometimes forget, like Twitter and Facebook, all those things obviously were starting to ramp up back in 2008, and it gave people platforms to talk about what they're eating, taking pictures of their food. I like organic, I like farmers markets, GMOs are terrible. All these things were kind of taking place in these conversational spaces. And farmers, our customers, were seeing this, and if you remember, if I can share this with you, only 2% of American population are farmers. So there's 315 million of us, and there's only like 2 million farmers, and there's probably 1 million of them are like big farmers. They're farm on 500 plus acres, or they have lots of cattle and all that stuff. So farmers, our customers, were kind of like, man, what's wrong with these people? We've been feeding them this food for so long, and now there's sort of this pushback against all our production practices. They don't think they're sustainable. They think they're polluting. They think they spray too many crop protection and herbicides and all these things. Like everything, it was good conversation to have, but farmers were kind of back in. So our customers felt a little bit threatened, if you will. What can we do to help our customers? So one of the things we were challenged with back in 2009 is how do we help improve the reputation of modern agriculture? So big farms, in my view, are not bad. We can let's have a discussion if you disagree, but modern agriculture, it's come a long way since the picture of American Gothic, right? That's what most people associate with farming. So we began this campaign called America's Farmers Campaign, really to sort of champion our farmer customers. Hey, they're the good guys here. They're really working hard on your behalf. They're behind the scenes. Let's prop up the farmers of America. We had an ad campaign at that time. These things on the right are programs that we did. So Grow Communities, for an example, is any farmer in America, in these participating counties, I think there was like 1,200 total, could submit their name into a drawing to win $2,500 to give back to their community, anything. And if you think about it, you go 100 miles west of here, there's volunteer fire departments, they're maybe on fire engines that are old, they don't have updated hoses, like this is needed money in their community because the farmers sometimes themselves are the volunteers at these things, or went to the local school, things like that. So really, let's help the farmers give back to their community. So there's a couple programs we did, went very well, our customers liked us. So we were advocating for our customers. And as we got into this campaign a little bit, we discovered that our customers are the best advocates, not only for themselves, but for Canby, for Monsanto. So we redid the program a little bit, America's Farmers. And again, we wanted to champion them even more so, but we also wanted to make that a little bit more connection to the campaign. So some of these things might have ran in Chicago like 2 or 3 years ago, but basically like behind every tuck-in, every tuck-in begins with a farmer. So it's a picture of you know, mother tucking in their child because sheets are made from cotton that came from a cotton farmer down in Mississippi or Louisiana, whatnot. Every feel better, kid eating a thing of tomato soup begins with a farmer because tomatoes are grown by farmers, right? So, you know, hey, agriculture is everywhere whether you know it or not. So that was sort of where this came from. Redid the website, looks nice. But behind that was this whole idea of like, again, we're starting to realize all the things in social media trendings like all of us three years ago. And we wanted to make social sharing the go. So we want our customers to share that content, right? And if you look on the right here, excuse me, on the left, that is just something from Earth Day, right? So the original environmentalist, the American farmer, and it talks a little bit about some of the things that American farmers have done over the last 30 years. That doesn't link anywhere. That's just a social copy, right? It doesn't link to our website, doesn't have our brand name in it, any of that stuff. It's just boom. And yeah, it was a little bit of a sponsored post, but I think it was one of the best performing things that the campaign ever done. 5,200 likes and 2,000 shares, which at that time we maybe had 50,000 followers on that page. The one on the right was a nice creative piece by someone on our team, Kate. Recognized International Women's Day to talk about these trending topics, and Mike was talking about a little bit earlier, how do you attach yourself to something? International Women's Day. Well, on the previous slide, I'd showed there's a farm mom program celebrating the farm moms out there. And she's like, well, we already did this stuff for farm mom. What if I just repurpose that and tie it into International Women's Day? So 5 fun facts about agriculture, about women in agriculture to tie in with International Women's Day. So again, shared widely. We made that kind of the focus of the campaign, and some of the results here that, you know, everything went up, yay, us, right? Great, farmers love us, fantastic, right? But we still had that sort of stuff I was talking about 8 years ago with the Michael Pollans and the social media, and organic has this halo effect, and we have organic gummy bears. I don't know if you ate those snacks, those are certified organic gummy bears. Go figure. Anyway, we still have these things going on with GMOs and where's your food come from. These are all great conversations. We weren't really doing that. We're very concerned about our farmer customers because they're the ones who help us make money. But in the end, farmers can't grow GMOs if the public doesn't like them, right? So how do we help people understand a little bit, but also be part of those conversations more? So we did some consumer research, and it's high level type stuff, you know. Who's making these food purchases? Moms typically make food purchases, right? Who's interested where they come from? Millennials and foodies love to know where their food comes from. Did it come from 50 miles away, or was it grown in Chile? Whatever the case is there. Sustainability is an important issue for a lot of consumers. Big ag, if you will, places can be sustainable. Believe me, I've seen it. But we're not telling that story. So these are some of the questions we get. You know, what's a GMO? Is organic better? Monsanto sues its customers, it kills bees, like all these sort of myths and pseudo-myths that are out there, we weren't really commenting on. So how do we reach that societal story, right? How do you tell a story about modern ag to consumers? So this was a strategy we started about 2 years ago or so, I think. Build our story, hadn't done a great job of doing that. We're creating content, again, for farmers mostly investor audiences. That's, you know, our share owners, somewhat employee-based. But again, we're kind of in that standpoint of farmers and investors and employees were mainly our main audiences. And career seekers, the career site on Monsanto.com is one of the most visited pages, believe it or not. So build a story, tell the story, get out there, actually interact with people, or you know, share stories, the content that we've created, and then engage society. Actually have people on the ground. I think someone said that in a presentation, like there's face-to-face interaction is fantastic, right? So we have to get out and present more, hence why I'm here trying to do that a little bit more as well. So this comes back to the employee piece a little bit, right? They want to help. They actually do. So Monsanto has 20,000 employees around the world, 10,000 in the United States. They passionately believe in what we're doing for agriculture. And they feel like we get the short end of the stick when it comes to with consumers sometimes. So they go out and they have these backyard conversations is something we refer to, right? So you're at a backyard barbecue and someone's like, is that grass-fed beef? Well, let me help you understand what the difference between grass-fed beef and conventional raised beef is, and let's have some of those conversations, right? So they want to help. We've had this like need in the employee in the organization with our employees to help. So we had this program called Ambassadors. So then started about 2 years ago, we had Ambassadors. This is our corporate intranet site, right? So if you look up the up top navigation, this communications tools, That was added. We added that navigation to launch with this campaign to discover Mount Sano, get to know a little bit more about us. So first we realized, got to get our employees on board or else this thing doesn't work, right? They're the ones on the front lines dealing with these folks every day. So this is our internet site, cultivating conversations, find out the stories of some of our employees who are actually out there doing presentations like this, or someone who is with our societal outreach team. They're going around to blogger conferences and trying to interact with mom bloggers, for example, things like that. The right side over here, talking about Monsanto. What do I say when I'm at the backyard barbecue? How do I approach this particular topic? What's the talking points? I know, again, this is super corporate, but that's what people want. They want quick things that they can have in their back pocket that they can answer some of these questions quickly without being aggressive, conversational, some quick tips for our employees. And then down the bottom right, these are things that we never really shared before, like what's the PowerPoint template I should use when I'm going to talk to the Lions Club in Abilene, Kansas? Like those were tools that, you know, you had to go talk to an admin to have that, find that PowerPoint template. Now it's like, boom, it's right here, go get it, download it yourself. And it's off the shelf presentations. What are we trying to talk about at Monsanto? Let us help you understand employees. So that was a big step in our right direction, just getting employees grounded of this ambassador program to say, I think there's like 1,000 of them, something like that. They opted in. We didn't force anyone. Just said, hey, if you want to talk about Monsanto, here's where you go. Look at the ambassador sign up. Help grow our voice. Email us to sign up for the program. So we have these, I think every other month we have these sessions. What are some of the hot topics about Monsanto right now? Okay, we made a donation to help try to preserve monarch habitat. What do you need to know? There's a GMO labeling bill that's in Congress right now. What do you need to know about that? You know, here are the things to have a conversation with people and not talk down to people about it. So as part of that campaign I mentioned to discover.monsanto.com, we invited consumers to literally ask us a question and join the conversation, right? So all these little bubbles are real, legitimate questions that came from consumers. So we had all these employees in this ambassador network. We got those tools, right? We got PowerPoint presentations. And I think Ellie mentioned it earlier yesterday at the McDonald's presentation. 44% of employees don't know what to share or don't feel comfortable sharing stuff. And a big thing at Monsanto is legal approval. I'm sure if you're in a corporate, like legal is probably the bane of our existence sometimes. They want to help though, they want to help in this case. So all these questions, our team helped answer. We had 1,500 people ask us a question, 800 or so are published. So the other 700 are sort of repeat questions that we answered through a back channel. But these are legally approved questions and answers that our employees now can reference when they're having a conversation at that backyard barbecue. Tell me more about what sustainability means to a big farmer. What is the difference between organic and conventional cropping systems? I don't know. Well, now we have an answer that's pretty much in simple talking points for a consumer, not a farmer audience, for a consumer audience. Hey, let us help you understand that a little bit. So that's another step. Next step was creating that content, building our story, right? So for us, we had a team in place to help me realize the value of content creation. That was the whole thing, 2 years ago. It still is, obviously, today. We set up, there's a few of us who are trained in journalism, and we said, the one thing I said, tell our story. Our boss was always around the whole, like, amplify this story. This is a great story about us. Make sure that gets out. What was happening was I'd get it from my boss, say, did you see this? It was like, basically like Office Space. Did you get the memo about the TPS reports? It was like, did you get the article that was written in the Wall Street Journal about us that was really favorable? Did you get it? Can you share it, please? Please share it. We'd get that from like 6 people throughout the course of a whole day. And be like, yes, we shared it already. It's out there. It's amplified, blah, blah, blah. So this was all happening. So we're like, how do we just centralize this? So we literally just formed a newsroom team, which we call a newsroom. It's probably, could be named something different. But we get together every day at 9:30. What the hell's going on? what stories are being written about food and agriculture today? What stories are being written about Monsanto? What's trending? So like this little thing here, National Toast Day, someone from the agency we work with was like, there's this weird hashtag trending, it's National Toast Day. Is there anything we can do with that? And I was like, well, toast is bread, and bread is from wheat, and our farmers grow wheat. So let's talk about how many loaves of bread come out of a bushel of wheat. There's a tweet, and he got it out. It took like 2 minutes to come up with that kind of thing, right? National Beer Day. Thanks to all the rice, hops, barley, corn, sorghum, all the farmers for National Beer Day. That's great. And those things, like, just it takes like 4 minutes to come up with that kind of stuff. So trying to tie in with trending topics is one thing our team does. There's sort of that long-form content that is very big trendy, like climate change. Agriculture plays a role in climate change. That's huge, 30,000 foot view to try to get people to understand. Then there's that daily stuff, like right now, farmers across America are planting. Plant16 is a hashtag if you're on Twitter. It's pretty fun to follow farmers and what they're doing. How do you create videos or content around that? And then there's these little daily things that kind of pop up, real-time marketing type stuff. So we go through everything, and just to show how this kind of comes together for us, these are all the teams that have participation in the meeting. We always have at least 8 to 10 folks in that meeting at any point in time. So we have everyone from internal communications to even our HR team. They run the LinkedIn page, actually, because if you think when LinkedIn started, it was an HR, how do we recruit people? And that's why I was on LinkedIn 10 years ago to try to find a job. Now it's changed a little bit, but we're making a little bit of content marketing play on it. But bringing all these folks together to say, what's happening in your world? Tell us, let us try to help you share that story, amplify, if you will, or create other content to help with that. So you're bringing more people into the mix to help with that content creation process. Not everyone on this team is a content creator per se. We have a content team that can help. We have an agency that helps us with that. But if you have an idea, bring it to this meeting and let us know what's going on. So we're creating all this content. We're moving everything down, everything's going great. And as Ellie said yesterday, 44% of people don't know what the hell to share. So this is a tool we have with Dynamic Signal, is the folks we work with. This is sort of like the one-stop shop for employees who are on social networks that want to share the stories that the company has sort of, quote unquote, approved, even though it's no real approval. But you get this first story up here. Here's a story that was in, I think it was on NPR out of Boston. Last month is our CEO, and it says share. So I've already shared this with screenshot, but there's a button on it that says share. It pops up, and the next window pops up. It's like, do you want to share it on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Facebook? And then we, our team, the social team, autofills that copy to be like, hey, do you want to know more about what our CEO thinks about crop protection or whatnot? And do you just one-click sharing, basically. It's a really nice tool. We've seen this go from like 50 people on our social squad, people who are active users, up to like 300 in the span of about 4 months. And we're trying to get up to like 600 in the next few months. So our executives are really excited about this because it gets back to that employee advocacy part of employees want to share the content that's out there. And this makes it really simple for them to do. The other thing you'll notice on the bottom down there, you know, vote for my simple things like FIRST Robotics is this like, you know, if you've ever heard of it, it's like the high school kids build robots and like they play a game. It's like freaking awesome. They have it down at the dome, which the Rams don't play in anymore, so they can do whatever they want down there now. But they do this, and it's like, you know, these tens of, you know, thousands of kids from all the country come, and we're a sponsor of that because we care about STEM education, right? You know, there's engineering that's involved with agriculture. There's so many things, science, tech, all that thing goes in. So we're a big sponsor of that. So that's trying to get our employees to share this video that we submit to be played at the thing. Then there's these third-party links down on the right side, just all about ag and food. Kind of human interest-y type things. Some employees share it. The thing I will say, if you go this route, real fast, our legal team is kind of like freaked out about some of this because it's third-party sharing, and theoretically, you can track what employees are sharing and what they're not sharing, and you don't want to use that against them because they might consider it a performance indicator, like, oh, you didn't share enough this month, sorry. You know, we already had a request, like, can you tell us who from Hawaii is sharing the most articles? We're like, sorry, we can't. Like we think we know it is, like, can't tell you, sorry. So that's just the watch out if you go that route. So this kind of sums this whole thing up, right? So we've got our corporate channels which push out all these messages. We have our subject matter experts and our champions who are basically the people we go to for, you know, quick information. Tell me more about glyphosate. What does that mean? Organic, conventional. We have an expert in the company. Kind of can talk about that a little bit. Then there's our social squad I mentioned, and that ambassador program, that big overall. The ambassadors aren't necessarily on social media, but they're just out there and they're interested in talking about folks. Those are all sort of the channels that we use to get out that content. What we're finding interesting now is just in the last month, folks in the ambassador program are really starting to take the LinkedIn to publish their blog posts because we want them to kind of become experts in their own space. And we're getting it kind of like doing an end around on legal on this. they're publishing it themselves with their own personal experience about why I like to work at Monsanto because it's on their personal LinkedIn page. And after it publishes and gets shared and liked by people, then we bring it back into the Monsanto ecosystem and share with legal, like, oh, this has already been published on this person. They've given us permission. Can you just take a quick read? And then we reshare it from our corporate channels. So we have a nice kind of almost two-way street going with our employees now and wanting to get out and talk more about it. Okay, so Monsanto's done this whole thing for, you know, 2 years now, trying to talk more with consumers, talk about employees and how they can help you. So it was this January 22nd. It was a Friday morning, came in the office and popped open Google, and the very top was a like little shape of a pepper. And I was like, well, that's weird. Google never talks about agriculture. So I clicked on it, and it turned out it was William Scoville's birthday. And so the Scoville heat scale on peppers, you know, sweet peppers are a zero, jalapeno peppers are in the middle, and then like the ghost pepper is like the hottest pepper in the world, and you don't want to eat it kind of thing, right? Habaneros, all that kind of stuff. So we sat there, and we came up, and we brought it into the newsroom, and was like, this is Scoville's birthday. We're in the pepper business. We, you know, we have a pepper breeder out in California. He's a really cool dude. He just like eats peppers all day and plants and breeds peppers, and he's a pretty interesting guy. We have a pepper breeder. We have a pepper business. Is there something we can do about this day? You know, well, I don't know. So this woman actually that's featured here, it's like, why don't we do like employees taste testing the hottest peppers that we can find? And they're like, oh, that's kind of interesting, right? Kind of humanizes us a little bit. So we did it. Guy ran out to the grocery store down the street, picked up, I was like, just go find hot peppers. And he comes back and he brought like five peppers, used a video and videographer. And then the employees, we kind of sent out a call out to the social team and in our communication team. If you want to taste some hot peppers and be shown on the video, come on downstairs. We're going to do this. We'll have some fun with it, right? So I don't have video embedded and all that stuff, so we can maybe play with it later, or if you can go to our Facebook page, it's out there. But we did this, and it's a three-minute video, and we basically just walked down from sweet bell peppers, which have zero heat, right, if you eat those, all the way up to a habanero, which is, like, just stupid, you know? Like, it's a delayed reaction, that's her face from eating the habanero on the screen cap there. But if you look on the right side, we hadn't really done anything like this before. And our employees sort of opted in to want to help us with this project. And we had great results. And, you know, you look down on our reach and our share, and we did boost it a little bit after it kind of did well. But this was one of our better performing posts at that time. And interestingly enough, I didn't screen cap it here, but in the comments section, a lot of our employees were responding, I didn't get the memo that you guys were doing this. Like, I would have done this. Or, hey, can we do this next time? I'd love to participate. I'm in C building. Come over to my building and we'll do it next time. And so we had this nice employee. We're like, now we have this, we have an idea now to like kind of test out, like put out on the internet page. If you're interested in doing weird photos with us in the digital team, come on down and sign up. We'll put you on our mailing list to get you out here. But again, you know, kind of resonate with folks. And then we did this just last month. We won an award from like, I forget what it was now. It was like one of these Great Places to Work Institute things. And we're the number 11 for flexibility. And flexibility mean more like, you know, you've got 12, you know, you got so many vacation days, flexible work schedule, you can work from home, all that kind of stuff that we all love, work-life balance kind of stuff. We're like, let's have fun with this. Again, it came out of the newsroom concept. What can we do that's like kind of flexible? So, you know, the group got together and just started doing weird poses of flexibility in the basement where we work. And, you know, 1,500 people and 450 shares, and it reached a whole bunch. We didn't put any money behind this. It just naturally just happened that way. What's interesting on these two photos, though, is farmers were liking it and sharing it as, hey, Monsanto's not as bad as everybody makes them out to be. And then a lot of our advocates in the science and technology place were like, that's a fun place to work. I want to work there. How do I work there? And there are people responding like, how do I sign up and work at your place? And we'd have to, like, go to careers.monsanto.com in the comments section to reply. So the Onion article that I'll show here in a second, this was, again, kind of being on your toes a little bit. This came out on January 14th, and I get an alert on from our tracking device. Monsanto lab on lockdown after scientists find shattered tomato containment unit. And the Onion has a lot of fun, right? And most of us here know that's satire, but a lot of our leadership team doesn't know that it's satire. So when these things pop out, we're like, we need to tell everybody that don't freak out. Your Google alert is not, you know, it's a satirical article. So we read through it, and it was a pretty funny article. I loved it. It was great. It's like about the story of we're doing deep research 2,000 feet underground in New Mexico. We don't have a site in New Mexico, just to be clear. And it's no sites underground that I'm aware of. And we're doing biotechnology, genetic modification research on tomatoes, and specimen 323-A jumped out of the unit and is wreaking havoc all over. If the thing goes up above the ground, everyone's going to die in the unit, and it's funny, right? So we read this, and I was like, this is funny. We should do something with this, right? We should respond. So that's me. The article mentioned if pollination takes place, everybody's going to die, so we kind of have fun with it. But that graphic looks a little familiar. It's because it's from Jurassic World when he's trying to tame the dinosaurs in that little movie trailer thing. So anyway, but this is stuff like, you know, 200 retweets isn't a lot for a lot of other brands, but for us, it's really good. Like, we're giddy about that kind of stuff. So that stuff makes it upstairs. But again, take some liberty, have some fun, be a little creative on these sort of on the things. So advocating on our behalf, show a little bit of a case study here. Zika virus, everybody's from Zika virus, familiar with that, right? So Valentine's weekend, I remember that because, you know, some of us were working on it. But this article came out, Monsanto larvicide, not Zika virus, true cause of Brazil's microcephaly outbreak, doctor. So there's a group of doctors in Argentina said, true cause of this is this larvicide, paroxifen, something like that, that they spray on water to control mosquitoes. It's causing this microcephaly, which is your babies get small heads, your brains can still grow, but your head is still small. Very sad, obviously. We found this through some of our Twitter tracking tools, that this was kind of like an abnormal spike in Monsanto mentions related to this. And we're like, that's really weird. So we kind of dug into it, and it was like, activists, myths again. Here we go. It hasn't reached mainstream yet. Let's kind of maybe take it easy for a day. First thing you need to know is Monsanto is not in the larvicide business, so they got that wrong. There's no connection between that larvicide and microcephaly. We weren't going to comment on that, but the data shows that there isn't. But the thing we wanted to mention is we aren't in the larvicide business. This isn't even our product. If you read this article, Monsanto's not mentioned to like the seventh or eighth paragraph. Like, it's about this whole study. It's clickbait. Activists love to do this to us. I'm not like cry me a river, you know. But if you can get Monsanto in a title of something bad, usually page views, right? You know. So this is what happened with this particular article. Got shared on the Facebook page of someone who's very pro-organic and anti-Monsanto. Robin O'Brien's her name. She has like 100,000+ followers. She shared this story on there, and there's her caption. And through human intelligence, one of our employees was tracking on Facebook. So his Twitter was increased. We couldn't really do his stuff on Facebook, but we knew who might share this. So we went out there to find out if they had. Within 30 minutes of her posting this, it had 500 shares and 500 likes, and it was probably 95% women saying, this is why I hate Monsanto, this is why I only buy organic, this is why you blah, blah, blah. So not good day, right, for us at least. I mean, maybe if you hate us, it's a good day, but for us, we don't. So we get out there and say, we wrote this blog post, got together with our teams, like, this is not true, we got to debunk this, this is BS, right? So I go out there and I post our comment, our statement onto that Facebook page. So we went off channel. They're like, maybe this will go away if we kind of just give it a chance. So eventually it'll go away. Hopefully it does. We don't want to make this a big deal that it doesn't need to be at this time. Continue these conversations. We don't produce or use the product. Destruction of your company is caused is beyond disgraceful. Realize people have a lot of questions about us. Please go here to ask that question if you want to. The truth. And they're just the business part. The company who actually manufacturers the larvicide, we are in a business relationship from a herbicide perspective. So herbicides kill weeds, larvicides kill mosquito larvae, two different things. But we wanted to be clear on that with those folks. There you go. So we talked about that a little bit. We don't own that company. That was the misinformation that was out there. So finally, we're like, okay, mainstream media isn't picking this up to debunk it. The activists are spreading this wildly. It's getting rewritten in lots of different activist publications and environmental publications, which is fine. That's what happens. So it was like we made the decision on Valentine's Day night around 7 o'clock to say, let's take the blog post and just post it to Facebook and see what happens. Maybe we can get people to debunk it there for us. This is the best Facebook post we've ever done. And it was just, it's everything you wouldn't do in a Facebook post probably, right? You wouldn't have that much copy in it. You wouldn't have, you know, you just wouldn't do it. But our employees came to our defense. Our customers came to our defense. The very first comment underneath this post after we posted it was, I can't believe you have to debunk this crap, but I'm glad that you are. And that was the chain that came on through the comments throughout was, I'm thankful that you're standing up for it. You don't need to have this bad rap, et cetera. Took two more days, but the mainstream media finally covered the story. New York Times, BuzzFeed, New York Times, Grist, which is a good publication from an environmental perspective. There's another one, Huffington Post, sorry. They used the same exact tactic that the activists did. They put Monsanto to heaven. Monsanto is not the cause of microencephalopathy, so they used the same tactic that we were hating. So another opportunity is to give your fans and your follow, you built this great following. This is just a little quick case study. There's some people talking about Facebook Live. That's me. Yeah, I'm in a wheat field. It came out, I don't know, it was March 7th, I think, the first one that we did here. So it was like a week or two after brands got access, maybe more. I could be confusing myself. But I was like, let's just try it, see what happens. And so I went out to a friend's farm. It's not too far from St. Louis, where we're based, and Monsanto. And so let's just try it out, see what works. So I think I did like 6 or 7 minutes out at the wheat field. And these were some of the comments we got. Really rewarding. Great job. As a farmer, I really like the live clip. I'd love to see more. Great job. Single take videos are difficult. Good fun. Thanks for the presentation. Keep it going, et cetera. So we've done like 6 of these now, these Facebook live videos. We've done one every week to follow this wheat crop. And engagement's probably gone down in terms of like likes. But if you haven't done it yet, our videos from Facebook Live, like there's a premium on it right now. Like it reaches more people. It just reaches automatically more people from the other stuff that we've been doing. So we've seen some value in it, but have a thick skin because I need Botox apparently. So I went to my boss and was like, we need to put this in the budget next year, I think, if I'm gonna keep doing these things. So this is something I'll leave with you. Similar to what Mike had, a little Venn diagram thing going there. But typically, Monsanto had been up in that learn circle. And I think through the other two examples I've shown you, or the other examples I've shown you, we can play in that love and laugh. It takes time. You can't do it overnight. If we'd gone out with that pepper video 2 years ago, it would have fallen flat. Like, we hadn't earned that credibility to be in that space and to get that goodwill. And if you do things like the Zika response, it's not a true love, but it felt loving to us because someone actually came to our defense to help us debunk a myth that was out there. And now you don't hear much about it. But in the past, you know, there's still myths out about Monsanto that are out there that have just gone on because we never responded. We never did anything about it. Now we're kind of being a little more active with it. So anyway, that's, I think, it. Hopefully that kind of tells a little bit of story of how you can take your customer base, build some advocacy value there, get your employees on board, and help them build some goodwill, and then you create that content that can support that and more or less can generate results. So.
You mentioned dynamic signal. Mm-hmm. So has that been working out for you? I know that they are probably one of the biggest leaders in what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we started, I think, in November, sort of testing it out, October, November, testing it out. This last, 2015. We started with a very core group of 50 folks who usually are sharing stuff online. And like I said, I think we're up to 300 now. Goal is to get to 600 by the end of August. That's our fiscal year is what we're sort of tracking toward. And I think the great thing about it is we've shown it to our executive team. One or two of them, they're like, why are you not doing this faster? Like, why are your employees, like, if they're online, don't make it a requirement, don't make them do it, but just get out and evangelize it, and people will come on board. And we sort of have seen our engagement and our shares inch up. I want to say, I forget it, but we've had more than like 1,000 shares of content in just the 4 or 5 months we've been at hardcore, and our reach has been like 1.6 million folks. So it's worked out for us. We've done good. I think there's a lot of great capabilities that we can work on with it. But if you are in a larger company, even small probably can pull off, but it really helps if you're trying to activate your employee base to like share more articles about not just yourself, but industry. That's a great thing I love about it. The stuff about Monsanto does well because people want to get out and tell themselves more. It's almost like overkill right now. We don't want our employees talking about ourselves all the time because if everyone in this room is sharing the exact same article, it looks rather staged, right? So we want that balance between like, hey, here's an NPR article on what you should buy at a farmer's market this weekend, or what's in season. So we're trying to get our employees to be a little more diverse in what they share. But it's been successful for us so far.
Program for that?
No, that's the thing. Legal would kill that thing in a heartbeat if we tied it to incentives. What we have done, or what we're trying, so that's the one thing about Monsanto is, most places are probably, but I found it particularly at Monsanto, if it's not your goals, you're not going to do it. So either put social media in your goals to become a subject matter expert or someone in that ambassador program as like a development opportunity, and then you can kind of make it as part of your incentive thing. There's no requirement to like, if you do 500 shares in this fiscal year, we'll make sure you get a little bit more of a bonus. Like, we can't, legal would we would not exist. So, but it's good. I mean, like, again, the more we get out and talk about it, I think that's the incentive for people to sign up, to show the value. And when our leaders team, I think that's that fine line of like, you don't want your executive team promoting it way too much, because then other people will have that like, oh, if I'm not on there, then I might get penalized. And we don't want to do that. That's not where we want to be with it.
Sort of.
We have a good history with it, so.
So, because I work on the agency side, mm-hmm. so that can get bogged down, right? Because you're actually having to contact a third party partner. So mm-hmm. do you guys find it more efficient to kind of just keep with your internal communications team and the legal team?
I think we consult our agency on some of these things, but the Zika example is a really good one where we consulted with the agency at the outset, and then we just brought it in-house because, like, we're going to get through this much faster. We know our business better than you do. No offense. You've invested a lot of money in us. But and the key on that example, I think, was we confined it to, like, 4 or 5 people. Like, when we got down to crisis comm mode, it's like, get the other people who don't need to be here out of the room, right? And that's another good example, I think, too, where this is something I spoke with. A group of lawyers came into Monsanto as part of a knowledge sharing thing a couple weeks ago. And we use that Zika case study, which is basically like, nowadays you need 2 statements. You need the media statement and you need the social media statement. And that's hard for legal to get their head around, at least at our company. So we've had those really good conversations. We brought them in early, and it helps to have someone in the crisis communications team would have some legal background. She is a lawyer, I should say. So she's understanding what we're trying to get. Like, look, if you put out this super aggressive statement, like defending it, like it looks good to your investors and it looks makes us feel good about ourselves. But on social media, no one gives a shit. Pardon my language, but like they're gonna look at you as aggressive, bombastic, and you know, capitalist, which everyone is in business. But you know, they're gonna look at you in a different light. So we're trying to get to that more conversational tone when we come up with some of those issues related statements. So yeah, that's kind of how we approach some of that crisis stuff. We've gotten a lot better. I mean, it used to be, I'm giving this presentation next week about how you get crisis social to the crisis communications table. The process was so convoluted like a year and a half ago. We'd have like 10 people reviewing a blog post, then the lawyers would review it, and then somebody would come back like, but I don't like that paragraph. And you're like, but legal already proved it. It's like, but I don't like it. And then you'd have to rewrite it and resubmit it to legal. And it would take a week sometimes to get a blog post out about something really simple and what you think is pretty straightforward. So we really narrowed that down like, okay, talk with it, get it, go, boom. If we're not done in 24 hours with a response to something, that's a bad day for us. Like, we need that blog. We need that. We need those responses out there. So it helps. And again, it helps the employees, right? Because employees are getting those questions from their friends and family. Like, I saw that you are doing X. Why are you doing that? It's like, well, let me point you to this blog post. Let me just quickly share that with you.
My question is, how often do you post? And it's kind of a twofold question. And have you ever had a crisis that has lasted a little bit longer than you'd like, maybe years? And how do you battle that?
Yeah, so second question is tougher. Posting-wise, we do usually 1 Facebook post a day, more or less. We can get better at our strategy on it. That's on me. I got this job like 4 or 5 months ago, but we're all on the content team and stuff, so I need to do a better job on our strategy type stuff. So I love coming to these conferences to figure out like where I am, where our team is, I should say. Are we here? So 1 a day. Twitter's a little bit different. So we kind of like look at it this way. Like, Facebook is kind of like a 70-20-10 rule for us. It's like 70% our own stuff, 20% third parties, and 10% that opportunistic type stuff. Twitter is sort of the opposite, where it's like more third parties, less Monsanto, more interactions with people on there. Instagram is 100% where we turned it over to a crop team in California who's growing vegetable crops. So they're taking pictures in the field every day. And we own all that stuff, right? LinkedIn is probably like 90-10. So we try to do 1 a day on Facebook, 4, 5, 6 times a day on Twitter, depending on the day, right? In terms of myths and longevity, I mean, just go, the simple answer is go to our Monsanto.com viewpoints webpage, and you'll see all our issues just lined out and all our responses to it. Monsanto has a weird history where old Monsanto, there's old Monsanto and new Monsanto, so sorry to bore you with this stuff, but old Monsanto produced saccharin. You might remember us for PCBs and Agent Orange. That was old Monsanto, chemical, all chemical. The new Monsanto went through some iterations and spinoffs and stuff and got spun out as an agriculture-only company, right? So, there was an agreement, which everyone wishes they didn't do at the time, to basically assume all the legacy issues for Agent Orange, PCBs, and those things. So those issues are here today, and they're with the current Monsanto. So those are examples of issues that are always around us. There's things like suing farmers, which again, we've done it like I think 10 times that we've taken farmers, our customers, to court because they were saving seeds, which again, I won't bore you with all the details, but you're not supposed to do that when you sign a contract with us. That's always there. That's what we always get known for. Monsanto controls the market. And so those are things that we always are battling one-offs here and there. They've kind of, it's died down a little bit, but they're kind of just always like, humming along on the surface down there. So does that answer your question, more or less? Yeah, so like it depends some on the influencer. So if you set up a Monsanto Twitter stream, like that's fun, right? I mean, it's just a long list of all of our issues that ever pop up. We control politicians, we control the media, we sue all our customers. Those things are always out there. It's usually if it re-enters mainstream conversations is when we'll come back out like, no, you have that wrong. Here's our position on that. That was a great thing about that conversation thing. We got those questions and we're able to point people to all these resources now. So it's kind of like we have a whole bunch of issues that just kind of lay under the surface always, and you just kind of wait for them to bubble back up. If we responded to every single person that asked about why we sue farmers, we'd be there 24/7, really. So thanks for listening. This is the first time I've done this, so appreciate it.